Tonight, our 40-minute speaker is Richie from West Los Angeles. Please give him a warm welcome.
Hi, my name is Richie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Richie.
Thank you. First off, thank you so much for asking me to come out. I have to apologize. Karen, I was supposed to speak here last week. For those of you that come regularly, you found out the speaker switched last minute and the secretary is probably scrambling, and I'm so sorry, Karen. And as she told me, that it all works out the way it's supposed to, and I believe that. But I'm glad I'm here today. The drive is... It's the drive. Luckily, I had a couple car mates, and we got the carpool lane, thank God. It didn't do much, I won't lie. It's fun. You see the regular freeway just moving past you, and you're like, this is backwards. This is just unfair. I want to welcome all the newcomers. There was a handful, and I hope you guys have a chance to find what I found here or find what you find here. It's an amazing program, and I didn't know that right away. It took some time to get into it to find out that was the truth for me. Welcome to the out-of-towners. I think Japan wins, hands down. I'm complaining about West LA traffic. I'm sure the commute was rough, but I'm glad you made it here on time. So that's good. I love my life. If you hear nothing else, if you leave here, I hope you know that I love my life. And I'm sure if you're new, you really care and you're really happy for me. That I'm so head over heels in love with my life. But I really do, and it's all thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, coincidentally, this program has given me just the most amazing life. And I'll get into it. But it wasn't always the story. My mom was 19 when she had me. We grew up together. I didn't know my biological father. I guess he took off pretty quick. He was 19. She was 19. And I can't imagine. You know, her parents said, if you keep the child, you're on your own. And you know, so she hit up the free clinic for unwed mothers, and that was the beginning of our little story. We got to grow up together, and it was adventurous. It was a lot of fun. You know, it was crazy times. Like, I look back, it was weird. You know, a lot of times we went without on some stuff, you know, but we had a lot of love. She, an exceptional woman to this day. Last night, I went with my girlfriend and my mother to the LA County Fair, and we got to see Boys to Men and En Vogue perform. About 20 years too late, but it was an exceptional show. I loved it. I can tell you, when I was like singing word for word, I wasn't even embarrassed slightly. That's a blatant lie. We had a good time though, but I love my mom, you know, and we grew up together, and she gave me everything I needed. She supported me. She encouraged me. She, you know, the time would come where the little handout would come for Little League, and I want to play Little League. And it was so seamless. She did such a good job that it was seamless. Like, I didn't know how much she struggled. You know, she was raising me. She was going to community college, and she was working two or three jobs. You know, just to give you an idea of home life. And that's not why I'm an alcoholic. That has nothing to do with it. If anything, that should be the contrary. I had such an exceptional childhood. Now, during that childhood, early on, I loved it. You know, I was a big fan of, you know, just the lifestyle, like the driving, the places, the moving. And it was weird at times. And I went to three different first grades. I went to how many different elementary schools all together. And we just were always moving. What I learned was I learned how to make friends pretty quick. And I learned how not to get too attached to them, or let you know who I really was, because I was going to be moving anyway. So the childhood was funky. And I think that's all of us. You know, I used to think that I felt different. You know, I hear it at a lot of meetings. You know, I always felt different. And I think that's pretty normal. Alcoholic, non-alcoholic, hard drinker, you know, moderate drinker, whatever. I think it's weird growing up. I think it's just a painful process. And some of us, like myself, like to spread that time out. I like to grow up real slow. I like to take a good 20 years to do it. It's pretty normal to feel uncomfortable and to be made fun of and to walk through all that fun stuff. And I, for a long time, thought that was an alcoholic trait. And it's common, but it's not only for us, or not only for me, I should say. So growing up was cool. I was kind of a smart kid. I was that kid you didn't like because I didn't study too much, but I got good grades. You know, I tested well, and I was popular. I knew all the kids. I played sports, and I was pretty decent at them. I had everything seemingly that I needed to be happy and successful, and for whatever reason, I didn't feel okay. Something was missing, and I didn't know what it was. I knew I was loved by many, and yet I just didn't know how to receive it. And I think that's the best way I know how to put it. I just didn't know how to accept love. I didn't know how to love myself. As time went on, I don't remember my first drink. Who'd have thunk I'd be in, you know, San Clemente speaking about it one day in front of all of you. I would have wrote it down. I would have had someone film it or something, you know, and seen what happened and showed you a little PowerPoint presentation or something. It would have given you a better idea of what happened. Because I don't know, you know. I know I was very young. I know my mom got married in 91. I was 11. I know I got plastered at her wedding. 2 days prior to that, I made this thing for Mother's Day. It was the end of the school year. And I made this, like, cardboard heart thing, and I punched holes around it, put this like little heart-shaped doily on it, and a little seal in my, you know, whatever fifth or sixth grade picture on it. And I Richard Kilgannon, promised to say yes to education and no to drugs and alcohol. And I signed it with my best signature, you know, which looks so horrendous. And I dated it, and 2 days later was my mom's wedding, and I was plastered. You know, like already, I looked, and it was so funny when I was 18 years old, and I had dropped out of community college. I took one class and I didn't get it, so I was like, I'm out of here. I went one day to SMC, Santa Monica College, and I never went back. I learned everything I needed to learn in that one day. I came home from school and I was pretty much doing the opposite of what that little thing I gave to my mom. And I come home and I'm living with my mom because there's no way I'm self-supporting. And I come into my room and there's that little heart I made for my mom about, whatever, 7-8 years prior. And it's sitting there in the same little cellophane, crappy wrapping that I put it in. And it's on my bed. And I can tell, like, I definitely plucked on the heart cord. Like, I felt it. I knew. And I knew what she was trying to do, and it kind of worked. But I was so upset. So instead, like, I went the opposite route, and I put a nail up on the front of my door, my bedroom door, and I hung it up on my door. Like, yep, that's right. Not in school. I'm an alcoholic. Look at me. I'm doing nothing with my life, and I'm your son. Because that's who I am when I drink. I really don't care about who I affect. It's not nice, you know. And I can tell you, it wasn't always like that in the beginning. I had an exceptional time drinking. Once I got into it, I'm not a fan of beer. I'm kind of a pansy. I'm okay with admitting it. You know what? I was going to say I don't like it, but you know what? I'm pretty okay with me today. You know, and that's just who I am. But I remember watching, like, my uncles and, like, family members and, you know, men around me, and they drank beer. And so I tried beer. I don't like beer. You know, especially at 11 years old, I was not a fan, or 10 or 11. It just tasted horrible. I tried, but I was a good little alcoholic. I practiced. If that wasn't going to work, I was going to try something that did, you know. And I tried wine. I tried various kinds of hard alcohol. And, you know, no matter what it was, it just never tasted good. And finally, I found it, you know, Shangri-La. And it was a lovely little invention by two gentlemen named Bartles and James. And I was on my way, you know. I would show up to my little junior high parties and quickly be made fun of. You know, everyone else is drinking Mickey's Big Mouse or, like, you know, St. Ides or something manly. And I'd stroll in with my 4-pack of pina coladas, and everyone's laughing at me. And you know what? But by the fourth one, I really didn't care because I was drunk. You know, and that's all I really wanted. Well, that and some taste. That passed, though. I learned to love every kind of alcohol. I will say that I did do drugs. I'm not going to get into it personally. That's just my thing. I don't want anyone here to feel like you need to do drugs to be part of AA. And if you did, welcome anyway. You know, if you have a desire to stop drinking, you're a member. Come to find out, that doesn't mean much. It just means that you're here. um, a member. Like, we get, like, badges and cool handshakes and, like, you know, discounts at hotels or something. I mean, get out of here. You know, Diners Club, come on. there's nothing special about being a member, except everything. It's weird. I got into it quick. I got sober when I was 21 years old, so it got bad, but it didn't get crazy bad. I realized that I'm probably closer to high bottom than low bottom, and that's the cool thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. They talk about what happened, and I'm not really good at describing what happened, because I don't know. I know that things got ugly, and I can describe that pretty well. I'm good at being naked, sweaty, picking my face, robbing. I'm not very good at it. And lying. And I'm not very good at that either. And I can tell you, to the best of my knowledge, what happened is I came to a place where I was actually willing to look at Alcoholics Anonymous as a real solution to my problem. And that's important to me because there was no way that this place had anything to offer me. I know for a fact that you guys have nothing I want. And then there came a time where I actually had hit such a low in my own personal life that I knew that I should probably give this a shot. And I think that's the best way I can describe my bottom. I had been fired from my job. I was a manager at Ben & Jerry's. It's a fine establishment. One day they gave me the code to the safe and they said I could be manager, and I thought, finally, they get it. thank you. So I took all the money in the safe because that was now my money, and I was on my way. I took the coupons for, like, the free cones. I mean, I took everything. I left nothing behind. That's not true. I left behind the rolls of pennies and nickels. I did take the rolls of dimes and the rolls of quarters. I remember strolling into work, and it's open. And I'm thinking, that's weird, because I open. And like, it's an ice cream store. You don't open early. You open at noon. And I'm thinking, who has keys? And I get there, and I see some lady behind the counter, and she doesn't look familiar, and that's strange. And I vaguely recollect this email that my director of operations had sent saying there was someone that worked there every summer. She might be assistant manager. She might be helping out. Her name was Ann. Okay. So I walk in. I'm like, she's like, hey, can I help you? And I'm like, yeah, I'm guessing you're Ann, the assistant manager. She goes, yeah. And you are? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm fired. And she goes, oh, you must be Richie. That was awesome. She said, the director of operations is in the back. Max is in the back. And go ahead and take a seat. He'll be right with you. He's counting the safe. I was like, he should probably be out pretty quick. So I took a suit and waited for good old Max. And Max came out and gave me that look, you know, that look you get like, really, kid? So, Rich, where's all the money? Max, funny story. You know, I noticed a problem, and I was just too nervous to tell you. I don't know what happened, honestly. And he said, okay, you got two options, kid. You can quit, or we can fire you. I was like, that's a funny thing, because I quit. I'm out. And I went home that day, and there was an eviction notice on my door. It was just one of those days, and like just previously, I had totaled the car, and just before all of this, the girlfriend left. And I swear, there's some girls out there that have that like sixth sense. They're like cats when an earthquake hits, you know, and the cat starts freaking out, and you're like, earthquake? And sure enough, you know, I should have known it was all about to fall apart because she took off and totaled the car, fired. Quit and eviction notice. I moved back in with Mom one more time, like I had done countless times. I put some stuff together, I destroy it, and I ask for help. Mom, bail me out. And I stayed with Mom, and she had seen this too many times and finally said, you gotta go. She let me stay for 3 days and said, I love you enough to say goodbye. You know, that was a tough day. I worked every manipulation tactic possible. I cried. I asked her why she didn't love me. You know, I'm your son. And I worked every angle possible for her to let me stay, and she wasn't going for it. She said, "I'm sorry, but if I need to grease the steps in order for you to fall and hit bottom, I just pray that you hit hard enough that you bounce back up." And I packed my little duffel bag and hit the road, you know, and I had a navy suit. I packed this navy suit because I needed to find a job, and I knew it. And this navy blue suit, and I had it from 8th grade, and I was 21. And it was huge on me, because when I was in 8th grade, I thought I was a gangster, so I got everything really big. And mind you, when I got sober, I was a whopping 95 pounds. My eyes are deep set, as is, but when you don't sleep right and you don't take care of yourself or eat right, they get really dark in there, you know, and I had acne. I had this acne. It was just yelling at you to get away from me. And I walked, like, my stomach hurt so much that, like, I would walk just, like, a slightly hunched over, because it felt like there was, like, this, like, bungee cord that was being pulled too tight. So I was, like, just slightly hunched over, and I was such a weirdo. And I'm not one of those people that thought I had it going on when I came into the rooms. Like, I knew for a fact it was quite the opposite. I ran into an old friend. Actually, I tried to get sober before that. I ran into an old friend at a coffee shop, and I said, "Do you want to go get a drink?" And he said, "I don't drink." And I said, "I'm so sorry." You know, and I was confused, because I knew we were the same age, and I didn't understand why anyone would choose not to drink, you know. And I thought, like, is it a health issue? And he was like, "No, I'm good. I choose not to drink or, you know, use anything that affects me from the neck up." And he's just using these terms, and I'm thinking, this is just weird. I'm like, "Dude, my condolences, but, like, no worries. I'll take care of all of it, you know, for enough for both of us." And he told me that he was an Alcoholics Anonymous. He was an AA. And he said those letters to you, AA. And I'm like, "Oh, okay, AA." Yeah. And I had heard them put together before, you know, like in a movie or something, but I never gave it a second thought. Like, I really didn't have, like, a pro or con. Like, I didn't really think about it. And it's like, whatever, that's for you, not for me. Time goes on, obviously. He takes me to my first meeting. It was Thanksgiving morning, 1998. I was at a meeting called the Log Cabin. It's in West Hollywood. And 7:30 in the morning, and everyone there on any given day throughout the year, they are so happy. It's 7:30. They are alert. They are awake. They are stoked on life, and they've got everything going, and they've got their dog, and they're talking, "Oh, I put a sweater on my dog," and everyone's just, "Nya, nya, nya." And I'm like, "Oh, this is weird." Casual dress Friday, and they're just feeling it. And the only thing happier than one of these people at the log cabin meeting is that same person on Thanksgiving morning, because they're just uber grateful. They're like, "Oh my God, I'm so thankful for everything in my life, for Alcoholics Anonymous." And I'm just like, kill me. And I'm wearing a bright orange shirt that says "I Heart Heroin." And and what's funny is it was given to me, and I had never even used heroin, you know, at that point. And I'm like, I walked up to me, and people are like, "Hey, cool shirt." And I'm like, "Thanks," you know. And then other people are like, "You should take that off. That could trigger someone." And I'm like, "I'm a gun?" You know, like, where are we? And they're like, "How much time do you got?" And I'm like, "It's early. I don't know. I can't afford a watch." And I was just weirded out, you know. I saw you people. You seemed happy, but I wanted nothing to do with it. I looked at you, and I believed that you were genuinely content with your lives. I just knew that you guys were nerds. I knew that you had tuned into this thing that meant nothing. I knew there was no God. I knew that you guys pulled out this, like, theoretical, like, God thing just to get you through rainy days, you know, your little God umbrella. And it's like, "Oh, things are poopy. God's going to save us." And I'm thinking, you guys are so lame. Like, I want to, and then at the end of the meeting, let's hold hands and say a prayer together. Let's do that. And then everyone comes up, "Hey, kid, you look weird. You look new. Can we get your number?" No. And they're like, you know, and like, "Hey, well, do you need a ride home?" "Yeah, well, I got you." And I'm like, "Actually, no, you don't. I'm going to walk." And I wanted nothing to do with it. I was very freaked out by this whole Alcoholics Anonymous thing. But I stuck with it for a bit. I ended up coming back. I got to that point where Alcoholics Anonymous was a possible solution. Not completely, not 100%, but it was possible. And I went to 5 meetings in 5 days. On the 5th, I went to a men's stag on the promenade in Santa Monica, and I was just weirded out. I didn't get it. And after the meeting, I went and bought a lottery ticket, and I won $25. Thank you. That's not $2. That's not a ticket. That's real money. And I walked into 7-Eleven so triumphantly, and I slid it across the counter. And I looked at dude like, Like, I bet you never seen this before. Totally unamused. Dude at 7-Eleven's like, whatever, kid. And he says exactly what he needed to say to me. And he says, do you want cash? Or do you want more tickets? Oh. And so I bought, long story short, I bought 2 more tickets and I won $500. Yeah, it does work like that. I got cash in hand. I had a wad of 20s in my hand. And I was no longer powerless, and my life was no longer unmanageable. Alcoholics Anonymous had worked, and worked well. 5 days, and I was a success story. Thank you very much, AA, and I'll be sure to tell my friends. Thank you. I went back to the restaurant I was at, and I wrote down what I was going to do with that money. I was going to pay rent. I was going to pay the speeding ticket I just got. I was going to pay all these fun things. And you know, the first thing I bought was the next day. I made it to bed that night, and the next day the first thing I bought was a Pacifico. And I pretty much kissed away another year and a half of my life from Pacifico. And see, the funny thing is, I knew about what this AA thing was now. Like, I knew you guys existed. I knew that you guys weren't going anywhere because you're lame. And if things got ugly, I'd come back. You know, I knew where to come. And funny thing was, after that Pacifico thing, lightning didn't hit because I knew it. I waited. Jails, institutions, or death. Oh, man. If I take this drink, lightning's going to strike. And I took a sip. And then I downed it. And I had a nice little buzz. And I was like, man, 5 days off is nice. You know, I was like, this is great. But they all lied. And then 2 weeks later, I was right back to where I was. Hopeless. And I didn't come right back. See, the choice had left me. And I didn't know that. I didn't understand that I don't have a choice in the matter. Once I take a drink or whatever it is that you do, I take that first one and all bets are off. It's null and void. And it's a shame, too, because I have the best intentions. I feel like I'm a sweet guy, too. Like, if you would ask me, like, when I first got sober, like, how did I see myself as far as my interactions with people? And I'd say I'm pretty nice and thoughtful and honest and all 3 blatant lies. I care for no one, you know. Countless nights my mom stayed awake wondering if I was still alive. Arrests, robbing, you know, stealing. I don't care. I get mine. I'm from the school of get mine. I was raised in the school of get mine. I get mine, the world is great. We're cool because I got mine. And I come to this program and they say, got it all backwards, kid. You got to give it to get it. I'm like, yeah, but I don't have a place to live. You know, my mom kicked me out. I've got nothing going. So I need the help. And they're like, cool, help someone else. Help us put away chairs at the end of the meeting and pick up cigarette butts outside. You're going to be just fine. Carry the 4. I'm doing some simple math, and it's not computing. I don't know if anyone has a TI-85 or something, but like I need something big here to fix me. So I don't have a place to live. I don't have a job. I don't have any money. I don't have food. And you're telling me if I put away chairs and I pick up cigarette butts, that I'm going to be just fine. I'm going to be okay. I said, yeah. At this point, Richie, we need you to sit down, because it was a participation meeting. My first meeting back was and I thought I should, I have no, and my lips were like on the mic, you know, like, hi, my name is Richie. I'm an alcoholic. I don't have a place to live, and I don't have any money. I'm kind of hungry, and if you guys could just help me out. I'm totally willing to work for it. I'm not just looking for a handout. Because I knew if I threw out that disclaimer, you know, like, oh, I'm not looking for a handout. Like, I'll work for it. And they're like, whoa. And you can see, like, right when my, like, first words came out, I'm like this. Everyone sort of backed up, like, back off the mic, kid. And I just kept going. I got a mission, you know. I need a place to stay. I'm a pansy, you know. I'm the wine cooler wuss, you know. Like, I need shelter, a nice bed, warm things, food, showers and such. And they said, here's the deal, Rich, like, your problem is, because we've been you before, and the problem is, like, you'll stick around, like, if you just, like, stay here, you'll probably get some of those things, a place to stay, you know, some money, maybe a job, maybe some food, and you might even get laid, kid, even you. I was like, but the problem is you'll probably, if you don't get into the steps, if you don't get into this book with someone that's been through it, you're going to relapse again, and you're going to lose all that stuff. And you'll do this over and over and over again until you have an entire psychic change, which comes from working the 12 steps. And I knew it didn't add up, not in my mind, not the way I work, but I didn't know what else to do. So I sat down and I just stuck with it, you know. I got a sponsor. I, at the end of that meeting, I put away a few chairs, mine and a couple others. I went outside and started picking up cigarette butts, knowing that it wasn't going to do anything, but I just didn't know what to do. I was going to do what you told me to do and prove you wrong. And a guy came up to me, and I got to stay with him for 2 weeks. He was a tennis instructor. He was up at 5, out at 6 a.m., which meant I was out at 6 a.m., which is kind of a bummer, but I was grateful, and as I could be. I slept on a mound of cat hair. I'm allergic to cats. I'd wake up all stuffed up and put on that huge navy suit, and I was in Van Nuys just sweating, and I'd walk Ventura Boulevard applying at places I was so much better than, like looking for a job. I'd get an application for Panda Express, and I'm like, Panda Express, right, like I'm going to slang orange chicken, and I'd fill it out, and I'd be like, management, you know, I'm management material, and they would never call, you know, so entitled. I came in here knowing I needed it all. I didn't get my first... Well, let's get into it. I got my sponsor. I didn't know I picked the wrong sponsor. I don't know if you guys can relate. I picked the wrong one. I saw this guy. He seemed to have it all. He was a vegan. He didn't smoke. Always at meetings. Always of service. Sticking his hand out. Everyone knew him. And all that, just like bonus. He had a beautiful girlfriend. A nice BMW. I was like, he was balanced. You know, my kind of guy. I was thinking, man, this is great. I want what he's got. So I'm thinking, cool. I hit him up. I asked him, and he says, sure. He goes, meet me at my place. He's like the second house off of Sunset Avenue on the boardwalk in Venice Beach. And I was living in Van Nuys with no car. And so I take the bus. I take four buses and walk the last little bit. And I'd meet with him for about an hour. That's all the time he had. And then I'd hop four buses back to Van Nuys. You know, I hated this dude. I get to his house, and he's like, all right, let's open the book. And so I opened to page one, logically. And he goes, what are you doing? Like, opening the book to where we should start? No? Am I not? Am I messing this up? And he's like, turn it back. Like, oh no. Oh no, 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 no. I got one of these Roman numeral fellas. I got that guy. Okay, great. So I turn back and I get back to the forward, and he's like, no, 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 the first, I was like, the first, we're going back to the first forward. Okay. And he goes, keep going. I'm like, the preface? The preface. We're going to read the... I've never read a preface in my life. Really, bro? And he goes, keep going. I'm like, table of contents? He goes, keep going. Alcoholics Anonymous? Front? There's nowhere else to go, dude. There's nowhere else to go. He goes, what's it say? I said, what do you think? You can... It says nothing. He goes, that's what you know. Well, that's just rude. Okay, he goes, I want you to write your name, your phone number, and your sobriety date, because this book is going to have your answers in it, and if you ever lose it, someone's going to be able to call you and get it back to you. And then he had me turn to the next page, which is Alcoholics Anonymous, and he had me draw the circle and the triangle, which used to be in our book, but copyright reasons we don't have it anymore, and I drew it out, and he had me write out the threefold solution, and what those actions are to follow that, and then he had me write a little line, and then he outlined where the steps are in the reading and the table of contents. And then we got down to the preface and we started going through page by page. I'd do a page, he'd do a page. I'd come to a word I didn't understand, which was a lot of words. That book is old. There are some words in that book that I, what's funny, there's some I definitely wouldn't know, and there's some that I probably should have known, because I sponsor people now, and I get to those words, and I say, you know what that means? And they're like, no, no, and they make up words, forever? And I'm like, get the dictionary. But like, I'll come to a word that I don't think they know, because I didn't know it, and I'm like, aggregate, you know what that means? And they're like, yeah, it's the total. I'm like, I know. It's also the sum of. So watch yourself. Just keep me on your toes. But we went through that book, and you know what? What I learned from reading those Roman numeral pages was that I got a brief history of what a very brief history of what Alcoholics Anonymous, how it came about, what we do here, what our aim is. And you know what? That was pretty cool for someone like me. I kind of needed to get a deep foundation. I like to run. I like to think I have the answer. My sponsor had me on this program, my first sponsor, because I always knew everything. Rich, you should sit in the front row. I know. You should probably go to 90 and 90. No, I know, I know. He's like, all right. You going to get some commitments? Yeah, yeah, for sure, I know. Bro, I'm on it. Okay. What don't you know? Well, I just have a good grasp of this program. I know, you know, what to do. I say it at every meeting. He goes, right. Okay. Your new thing is I'm going to ask you what you know, and you're going to say you don't know much. And so I call him up, and the first thing they're like, hey, what's up, Benji? Hey, Rich, what you know? Not much, bro. And as time went on, I realized I knew less and less, you know. He had me dry out this, like, little pie chart, and he just ruined me. He was just basically telling me, just don't have the answer and you might learn something new. And I had to start from scratch, because when I know everything, I don't learn anything, because I already know it. I don't need to hear what you got to say, because I know. When I come into a situation and I don't know, I actually hear something. I try something new. I listen. I actually genuinely listen. I got written up at a job probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and I knew why I got written up. I knew exactly what I did wrong. I had got called into a meeting, and I knew what they were going to say. I knew exactly what they were going to say. I knew what I made them say. But instead, what I did was I went into that meeting and didn't have an answer. I didn't know what they were going to say. And I said, they said, you know why we called you in? I said, I have an idea, but I'm not sure. I'd like to hear it from your point of view. And I just got to learn something new. I got to become a better employee. And if I can do that in most of my situations, I learn how to grow as a human being. Today in my life, you know, at 7 years, I got a new sponsor. I can say my sobriety's been a trip. First of all, I fell in love at 5 months. I recommend it. The fog had lifted. You know, the fog was gone. I could see so clearly. There she was, and I knew she was the one. So a couple months later, we got tattoos. Yeah, I recommend it. So neat. You know, if you're around 5 months or whenever, just get it. Just do it. Just do it. I can tell you she's gone, but the tattoo is still here. So awesome. constant reminder, doesn't go anywhere. I got my first car at 13 months. It was a 1968 Dodge Dart. It's pretty cute. It's missing the back window. Didn't have any electric. Slant six. It was a cute car. It's all white, kind of rusty. Couldn't get in on shotgun. There was this vent right near shotgun where however fast I was going was how fast the air outside was coming in. And whatever the temperature was outside was what the temperature was inside. So people are like, I'm sorry, can you turn on the air conditioning? And I'm like, actually, you know what? I can't. People didn't want to get rides with me. It kind of worked out. 3 months after owning it, reverse went out. I just one day, I'm backing up, and I put it into reverse. I look behind me, and I'm like, oh, I must put it in neutral. One down. All right. Okay, looks like we got two neutrals. This is neat. I just figured God was telling me I could only go forward. I drove that car for another 9 months with no reverse in L.A., like the heart of L.A., which parking is horrendous as is, and imagine not having a reverse. I know you're trying to work it out right now. It's you have to have a driveway in front of you. As long as you have that, no one can box you in. Either that or a hill. There's not many hills, but if you can find like even like a slow downgrade, like just enough to pop in a neutral and get you a little natural reverse. I sold that car to a homeless man for $200. Only got 100. He never came back like he said he would. I'm just painting a picture of how not bright I am because I'm so, like, just because I'm sober. I heard a speaker, I had a speaker speak for me. I secretary a meeting on Monday nights, or Tuesday, Monday and Tuesday, but Tuesday night. And he, I like to think I'm special because I'm sober. I really think I'm doing such a great deed. And the fact of the matter is, and the way he put it, and I thought it was so neat, he said, I'm 12 steps behind everyone. I need to work 12 steps just to break even. He says, I thought this was so beautiful. When I wake up in the morning, I wake up super early and I read my literature. I say some prayers. I meditate, because that way when my wife wakes up, she meets a nice man. Yeah. So I got this new sponsor at 7 years. I realized I was kind of lagging. And I met up with them on my 7th birthday at Starbucks. We met for 3 hours. He asked me about my program, and I broke it down. And at 7 years, this is about just over 2 years ago, at 7 years I was sponsoring 15 people, 13 of which I was meeting with on a weekly to biweekly basis. And honestly, going through the book as I was going through the book the first time, I made it to about 10 to 12 meetings a week. I was in a position where I could. I had commitments at three of them. I was speaking on average weekly. Every week I was speaking. I was speaking about 4 or 5 times a month for the last 2 years, from about 5 to 7. And I had the answers. I was levitating. My fart smelled like Chanel. I was on fire. And I told him all this thinking, I bet you he doesn't even do all this, you know? And he goes, okay. Daily inventory? Well, I mean, I spot checked, you know? I'm prompt to make amends when I'm wrong, you know? Yeah, he goes, no pen to paper, though? And I said, no, not really. He goes, okay. Prayer and meditation? I was like, you know, again, sort of spot check. I'd be driving and, you know, give a little shout out to the big homie. And, hey, big homie, thanks for all this. You know, and he's like, okay, but you don't hit your knees morning, night? No. So what about meditation? I was like, he's like, never? I'm like, yeah, never. He's like, okay, I'm going to put you on my phone as H.A. Ritchie. I was like, H.A. Richie? And he goes, yeah, half-ass. Time out. Car coming. Did you hear the part about 15 sponsees, 10 to 12 meetings a week? I'm speaking weekly. I'm kind of a big deal. He's like, dude, you don't work a program. He goes, you know, I thought I was working all sides of the triangle. I thought I was going to a lot of meetings. I thought I was being of service. And I thought I was in the book, you know, my recovery. But I was in the book with sponsees. I wasn't doing any step work myself, you know. And so he gave me this program where I have he calls it a spiritual backpack. So I have this spiritual backpack, and I bought a new backpack, and I fill it with all these books, these spiritual books. A lot of them are AA related, you know, big book, 12 and 12, As Bill Sees It, Daily Reflection, stuff like that. I have some other stuff, you know, from different organizations that aren't AA approved, but they have recovery, you know, based information, and some of it I like, some of it I don't, but I take it with a grain of salt. And stuff I like, I keep. Stuff I don't, I discard, you know. I threw in some other books like The Prophet and stuff that I like, and, you know, whatever I'm into, you know. Some self-help stuff, because why not? And I journal, and I write a gratitude list, and we got into this one book. Oh, this is so embarrassing. Okay. Got into this one book, and on May 28th, it recommended that we write 40 love letters. Write a love letter to yourself for 40 days. Now, this is not AA approved, and I'm not telling you go do this. I'm saying this is what I did. So we read this, and my sponsor looks at me and he goes, what do you think? I'm like, oh, yeah, I can get that, you know. They mentioned, you know, like, how can you love someone else unless you learn to love yourself? And I'm like, yeah, conceptually, I totally get that. I was like, it makes sense. He goes, all right, let's go get stationary. I'm like, I'm sorry, excuse me? Let's do it. We're going to do 40 days. I'm like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? I can tell you, I went out and bought stationery. I got it lined with little red flowers because I think the color red is just so sexy. I use a red pen because if I'm going to receive a love letter, I want it to be in red ink. Like I said, I think it's sexy. It's my love letter. I get to write it any way I want. I almost got perfume. I held out. It recommended all this fun stuff. But the first one I can tell you, I wrote it. I said, my dearest Richard. It's like standing in front of the mirror naked and telling yourself you love yourself. And it's uncomfortable, you know? Not that I've ever done that, but you write a love letter to yourself, and it's just weird. Because I realized I don't love me. So along with all my little readings, I write a love letter to myself. I write something, whatever. I sign it yours always, because that's true. Not going anywhere. And I do these things, and it affords me a life that I love. A life that I truly love just as is. I'm not trying to build a life that I can love. I'm learning to love the life I have and grow from there. I have everything I need to be happy. If I base my happiness on love, money, success, any of these things, typically I lose. I end up unhappy because these things fail me, because they fluctuate, they move, they change. If I base it on a connection with something greater than myself and a process that I can do wherever, whenever, I'm set for life. You know, I do these things in the morning, and I didn't do them this morning. I did it yesterday. I didn't do it this morning. I have time to do it before bed. Thank God. And I learned to love my life as it is. Outside, there's a white Corolla. It's got a scratch on the side, a nice dent that I got from Staples Center. Gotta love them. It's missing all the hubcaps. It's, you know, I pay way too much for it. Way too much. Like Cadillac. I could buy a Cadillac with how much I pay for that Corolla. But I love that Corolla. My bank account is silly. It's so cute. We play tug of war. A lot of times there's a negative in front of it. But you know what? It's my bank account and I love it. My life, just as it is amazing. And I don't say that to sell you. I could tell you some things. I don't want to brag right now, honestly, because it's fine. I hope if you're new that you find what you're looking for, whatever it is. We don't have a monopoly on happiness. You know, it's out there everywhere. The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. You don't even have to stop drinking. You don't have to go to 90-90. You don't have to get a sponsor. You don't have to work steps. You don't have to do any of it. You know, I noticed that the people that are happy here and that stay sober for consecutive days tend to do those things, and there's a beaten path that I want to follow, you know. And if you're new, I hope you find that as well. Thank you.